Hello, artists. It's Catherine Rafuro with the Acting for Your Life podcast, and thank you for joining me for part two of my interview with makeup and practical effects artist RJ Hattie from seasons 2 and 5 of Face Off. RJ is also a teaching artist and has a workshop coming up this weekend, and if you listen to the podcast, he'll explain to you how you can sign up for his workshop. This particular portion of his interview has to deal with the period between going from school and being a part of Face Off and then returning home. He also speaks with us about what it's like to be an artist who is struggling with depression and how he's able to make it through every single day. He's such an inspiration to me and a fantastic artist. I can't wait for you to hear part two of the interview, so let's get to it. Here is part two of my interview with RJ Hattie.
Well, after that, I got a job with a guy named Tony Gardner who runs Alterian Studios. I think it's called Alterian 8 now, but he was nominated for an Academy Award this year for his work on Bad Grandpa. So,
oh, fantastic.
It was very nice to see him after all these years finally get some recognition for his really amazing work. I was always a big fan of his as a kid, and then I ended up working for him, which was kind of cool. And I stayed there for about 5 years, went to them, and then Pop got sick. And by sick, I mean, we always knew he had diabetic problems, but his macular degeneration had gotten so bad that he had to stop working.
Wow.
Because he couldn't see the computer screens anymore. So, here was Mom back here busting her ass to try and keep everybody afloat while he wasn't working, and my sister was in school, and it felt like, well, okay, I'm going to have to go home for a little bit. I didn't realize that a little bit was going to turn into 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's what happened. And over that 10 years, it was good. I mean, I'm glad I came home, because if I didn't, I probably wouldn't have had the time that I did look at. And then he eventually passed away, very suddenly, though, and completely not related to diabetes at all. He had a lymphoma cancer and chose the more aggressive therapy, but the aggressive therapy really played a number on his body.
Were you able to at all use any of your artistic skills or any of that kind of escape that you had as a child? Were you able to escape into any of that during that stressful time? I know, like, for example, when my grandmother passed away, I just poured myself into theater as much as I possibly could, because I didn't have the skills, and I think only recently have I, and that's been almost 15 years ago, I couldn't deal with it. Having, you know, made that sacrifice and coming home, were you able to pour yourself into your work? Were you able to your artistic skills?
Was teaching at the time. Mm-hmm. That's what I had done over the last 10 years, was I became a teacher and built the only program in the state at the high school level for film and television and video production. So I built a whole day program out of it, built the curriculum for it. I was really proud of that for a while. And we did that for 8 years. So that was really something for me. But when Dad died, I think that hit me harder than I thought it was going to.
Sure.
I just kind of went through a lot. I started back in the fall that year. He passed away in May. Started back in the fall the next year with the kids. And then that January, after he passed away, the first season of Face Off premiered. And it was very weird because the kids came in the room and screaming and stuff. And this is part of what I taught them, with special effects makeup, of course. And they came in and, oh my God, have you seen the show? And I'm like, what are you talking about? And so one of them grabbed my laptop away and I'm like, hello? And he just automatically just starts typing in the, you know, sci-fi website. Boom, there it is. And my jaw hits the desk. I'm like, you got to be kidding me, man. The funniest thing about it was that, and then the fact that we turned it into a classroom activity. We would watch the show during class, and we would talk about the makeups after we watched the show the next day, and then what makeups did you like, and what did you not like, and this, that, and the other. So it became a real event for us. Well, I remember very distinctly right after the season, by the time the season had, you know, played out, everybody in town had been hitting me up about it. Did you see this yet? Have you seen this yet? Yes, we're watching in class. One of the kids said to me, one of my former kids, he graduated, you have to audition for this audition thing. I'm like, I don't think I should audition for this. This is, you know, I'm not good enough to do this. And okay, whatever. So immediately after the season ended, they posted the audition. And they were, the kids all looked at me and they were like, do it. And I was like, okay. So we made a video. I'm in the video. And probably literally a day after I sent in that video, they called me. It was really hilarious how much they liked that video.
Did the kids help you make the video?
The kids helped me make the video. They were in the video. You can
Fantastic.
See the video. It's on YouTube and it's on my website. If you want to see the video, it got me on Face Off. It was pretty funny. I dressed up as a big monster and ran around the school and grabbed people and stuff. I do that kind of crap once a year anyway, just to, you know, just for the hell of it. You know, just at the school, just to give the kids a charge, you know. So, and plus two, I feel like when you do that, when you do that kind of thing in front of a group of kids, it's like they look at you and go, I want to do that now. Because they see how much fun you're having doing that, you know. And they see what you're bringing, you know, out as a different character. I think that they just get, they get even more than that. They want to do it, you know.
Yeah.
So it kind of inspires kids to actually get off of their butt. So that's kind of why I do it. But this time I did it for a video audition. And then they sent me all this paperwork, and I looked at it and, you know, sign it in blood, give us your firstborn child and your left testicle and everything else. and I said, I can't do this. There's no way. I'm not signing my life away. I'm not going to do this. They said, well, if you have questions or concerns, call us. And so I called the lady. She was very nice to me. And she said, you know, it's meant to scare you, but don't let it scare you. She said, I've been doing reality TV a long time. That's a standard contract. She said, they never go after them. And I'm just like, well, okay, whatever. But they're very lenient with them. I tell the kids this, and the one boy, this is even funnier, one of the boys looks down at me and he goes, you know what, you shouldn't do this for yourself. I'm like, what? He goes, you should do this for your dad.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh, you little shit. My dad had always said things like, well, I feel so bad that you had to come home for me, or that I caused you to come home, or that kills me, I'll make sure you get back to California someday. And it was so weird that that happened, because the way I look at it, it's creepy, but he kept that promise somehow. He was upstairs pulling some kind of string. I don't think I realized how impactful he was to all of us in this house. I mean, he was very demanding, you know, like he was the original house Nazi, you know, before the real world ever coined the phrase, that's what he was. He was so demanding that everything had to be right, and he would think, God, I'm never gonna miss you.
Yeah.
And then when they're gone, it's like they were such a presence in your life. It's like, well, what do you do with yourself? You don't know what to do.
Yeah, I had, and I'll mention her again, my grandmother was that influence on me, you know, it was just, and she was so old school. I mean, she was the type of woman who had actually gardening dresses, and she wore, you know, specific jewelry and dresses and gloves that matched and jackets and little things, and all of her tools and utensils matched, you know, that she was using outside on her garden matched her dresses. And she would always laugh, and she would tell me, you never know who's going to come by. Well, one day,
right?
You never know who's going to pop in. And Jerry Abramson, who was the mayor at the time in Louisville, was doing a neighborhood sweep, and he came to her house just kind of randomly walking down the street shaking hands with people, and she offered him, you know, because she had the iced tea ready, she had the little sandwiches ready, and she looked at me, and it was finally like, now see, I planned all these years, never know, the mayor's gonna come over, you know. But that
justified the rest of her life, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, you know. She was like, I'm justified. But it was that idea. She was very demanding, and she was very she wasn't very tactful, you know, and she would just say whatever it was that she had to say to you, and if it hurt your feelings, you kind of had to deal with it because she was an elder. But when she left, there was such a hole, a void that is still to this day I have a hard time filling.
There are many people in my family that were like that, and now that a lot of them are gone, I find it very difficult to enjoy family get-togethers and be around the larger family as a whole. It's very noticeable. Everybody's very distraught over why I'm not being as social as I used to be when I was younger.
Let's transition. So your Face-Off audition. So you finished your audition. They liked you. You started signing paperwork. And what happens next? RJ leaves family and goes out to L.A.? What does that look like?
Well, I mean, I'd lived there for 5 years. So it wasn't like, you know, city mouse, country mouse kind of thing. It was just, wow, I'm actually back here, you know. That was the funny thing about being a teacher. You have all your summers off. You can go and do whatever you want, but you're so damn broke, you don't have the money to do anything. So, you know, you kind of go, okay, teacher's salary sucks, but the free time is cool. So that's what I would do during my summers off, is I had tried to, for many years, reestablish some kind of connection with some of those people, but it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Then Facebook comes in. my reestablishing friendships from people who I had gone separate ways from, that I didn't like the fact that I had done that, but, you know, because of moving home and across the country, kind of sometimes stuff happens. Plus, we've become a more mobile society because of smartphones and stuff now, too. So, you know, smartphones and the internet and all this stuff has, you know, blossomed during this whole time that I've been at home. So it was a very different way of thinking about things. Now I could communicate and talk to these people and try to, you know, can I get a job with you guys this summer? Nothing happened. So, I mean, so that was kind of disheartening. You know, I never got the summer job that I was hoping to get, you know. And FaceUp was the only thing that got me actually back out west. Go figure. I don't know. I mean, FaceUp is FaceUp. What do you say about FaceUp? It's a glorified game show. Yeah. It really is. It's a game show. But what about it was, it's also a video resume. It's not just your work on display. It's you and how you work with other people on display, too.
Sure.
And that's very, very important to this business, is how well you get along with other people that you have to work with.
Mm-hmm.
I heard commencement speech that Neil Gaiman gave, and I have never heard anything more true in my entire life. There are three things that you have to have in life, he said, in order to work. You have to be on time, you have to be pleasant to be around, and you have to do good work, in that order. And you only need two of those things at any given time. Because if you're pleasant to be around and you show up on time, people will teach you how to do good work.
Mm-hmm.
If you do good work and you show up on time but you're a little bit of a shithead, people will put up with it. But anyway, you know what I'm getting at. The whole point of it is that you only need two of those at any given time in order to be sustainable. And that's very, very true, especially, you know, because my experience, of course, is dealing with the effects shops and effects professionals. They would much rather have somebody around that they enjoy being around.
Mm-hmm.
You're working 18 hours a day with these people. They don't want to put up with some arrogant turd.
Yeah.
You know? If he is the best on the planet, they will hire somebody they know that they have, that has potential and they can do something with, and kind of mold and shape them in the way they want them to be, rather than some jerk off that comes in and says, well, this is how I do things.
Sure.
You know? So, and that's, you don't want to be that person anyway.
Yeah.
I've told the kids that for years and years and years and years as a teacher, but it really is very true.
Well, I think too that whole idea of passion and potential, those two things are so they're just paramount in building a sustainable career and finding, you know, those moments in your life when you actually can make a difference. Because if you have passion and potential, no matter what the universe hands to you, in terms of the type of work that you do, you really can make the best of any situation and come out on top, I believe, at the end of the day. And as kind of Pollyanna as that sounds, I think that really is a cornerstone of being an entertainer.
Oh, I definitely believe that. I mean, I just, you know, that's the thing. You have to have a work ethic, too. You know, a lot of kids today realize, and this is the funny thing, too, about FaceOff. A lot of professionals in the industry badmouth the show. Oh, it's going to cause an influx of people thinking that they're going to be making buddies, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Who cares? Because when the business was at its heyday in the 80s and 90s, when I got into it, people said the same thing. You know, but who cares? Because the people that are going to do it are going to stick to it and they're going to do it. People that are going to get into it and realize, oh, this is a little bit of work. Or, ooh, they realize it's going to be this hard. They won't stick with it. And they'll find something else to do. I mean, that's the thing. That's life in general, though.
What was the difference between seasons for you, between season 2 and season 5? Fundamentally for you as an artist, what were the differences between season 2 and season 5?
That's a very good question, because a lot of people have asked me that question but haven't added that additional tidbit at the end. The fact was, I was coming back and I realized on season 2 that they didn't take a lot of what I did seriously because I interjected too much humor into my pieces. I wanted to come back and show them that I could be a serious artist, that I could do other things. And I did that very seriously all the way through the first 4 episodes. Beginning of the 5th episode, we had an interviewer who sat down with me and said, okay, I have one last question. Why haven't we seen any of your signature? finish your work yet. So we haven't seen an Argent makeup, as we said.
Mm-hmm.
Why haven't we seen an Argent makeup? And I looked at him and I'm like, what the hell is an Argent makeup? Well, you know, we haven't seen a chest of drawers or a shark lawyer or a velociraptor. And I'm like, well, because I don't really think that the judges like those things, and I'm kind of wanting to show them that I have a lot of range. That was my, you know, very thoughtful answer.
Yeah.
Said, but don't you, then they come back like, well, don't you think your fans want to see that? Like, my fans can wait, because the fans ain't keeping me on the show like this. You know what I mean? It's like, the fans, I'm like, of course the fans want to see that. And I said, well, I suppose if I get a competition where I feel like I can work some humor into it, I will. But we haven't really had any challenges that I felt were, I could lace any humor into.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing of it was, is then this Mother Nature thing comes up, and then they throw that at me, which was, of course, as Neville likes to say, I'm like, okay, that's low-hanging fruit. That's Neville's catchphrase.
Sure.
And I have to use it for the show, because it was like, guys, we just did this. This was the season 2 finale. I did this in the season 2 finale, and you're making me revisit something that I already did. I was always very conscious of trying to create new and different things, stuff that I hadn't done before. I wanted to challenge myself every single time I was on the show, whereas other artists, and a lot of other artists, especially on that season, were regurgitating makeups that they pulled from their portfolios, which I believe is not fair. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's fair to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's fair to the audience, because they can go through your portfolio online and look at the same damn makeup you just did on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So, having said that, I thought, well, this is a good chance for me to work humor into it, because my mother is probably the funniest damn person I've ever met. Not on purpose, either. She's just accidentally funny. So, I was like, well, this is perfect. Finally, I can. But I had his little bug in my ear, too. And I just figured this is the prime time to do this. But it just showed me that what I was thinking was true all along, which was, they don't care for my funny sense of humor. So, for me to get eliminated when it obviously wasn't the worst thing there, and in fact, the worst things that were on stage ended up being safe, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
It just kind of lent itself to the fact that the first time I tried to do something funny, they were just over it and didn't want to see it, and that was the end of it. It's just them, because I felt like they had a chip on their shoulder for my particular style. Had nothing to do with me up until that point. I was not in the bottom up until that point. We're not in danger of being removed up until that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, the first chance they get to get me off the show, they did.
Well, so then you come home. I'm assuming that right after that you come home, and I think that if you are okay with sharing your story about having some depression when you came back, I would really appreciate it, because there's a lot of people out there that deal with it and don't know how to deal with it. So I'd love for them to hear that they're not alone. But let's keep up.
I dealt with it very poorly, actually.
Well, that too. I mean, and however you feel comfortable with it, because honestly, I probably get RJ. No kidding. I probably, of the 200 emails I get away a week because of the podcast, I would say 75 of them are artists who are dealing with depression, and they just feel completely alone. They feel like they are the...
Well, I mean, I think that's a huge part of what we have to deal with is rejection. I mean, like, you as an actor, you have to deal with rejection a lot. You also have to deal with the public's perception of you,
mm-hmm.
which I don't even know how A-listers deal with. I mean, they just must not ever have... I would never be able to read anything. A lot of the stuff that came out during the course of the show was so vitriolic online. I mean, and it's people that have no clue, number one, how to do what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And they feel like they can criticize and cruelly criticize, not even constructively criticize, what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And my only comment is, well, fine, if you think that you can do a better job, then please, by all means, audition for the show and see how you fare. You know, so that's one of the things that really irritated me about the internet, why I stay off. But, you know, if you look at my Facebook posts, they're advertisements for classes, and they're funny, stupid things that I'm reposting from other people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't bother to get into opinionated discussions with anyone anymore on the internet, because it's a waste of time. It's like talking to a Republican. So I have just decided, I have just decided to streamline my life and not deal with it. You can't read any of those reviews. You can't read anybody's blogs. You know, you can't deal with it. I mean, that was my thing. When I came back from season 5, I was horribly depressed and demoralized. I thought, this is ridiculous. I'm a finalist, and my work was not that bad. I did not deserve to go home. So I finally understood what my fellow compatriots had to deal with during season 2. Mm-hmm. When they were eliminated, I never had that feeling of being eliminated because I got all the way through. Of course, I was tense and on edge the entire time because I didn't know if I was going to get eliminated or not. But I never was, and I never dealt with those emotions until season 5. Whereas season 2 finally gave me the ability in my life that I had never had before to say, maybe I am pretty good at this.
Yeah.
Maybe I do know what I'm doing. Season 5 completely shit all over that. and so I came home very deeply depressed. I had to talk to the show's psychologist several times over the phone. And I do recommend that if you are, I mean, here's the thing. Finding the time to go talk to somebody is one thing. Finding the money is completely another.
Sure.
You know, so it's like a lot of this stuff is not covered by insurance because it's elective.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you can, I don't know. I mean, maybe it is for some people, but I think my policy, it wasn't. I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of policies are so incredibly different, you know, and I was mentioning to you before that a lot of, you know, of the 200 emails that I get a week,
yes,
because of the podcast, 75% of 75 of those are folks who are, you know, talking about dealing with behavioral issues and depression and those sort of things that aren't covered in their policies. So I know for me that on my policy it is, but so many people don't have that luxury.
Well, and it sucks for them, you know, because it's like, that was kind of, even the show was even to the point where they knew they could see a change in me, and they were like, you know, we'll pay for you to go to a psychologist if you need to talk to somebody. And it was one of those things that I just decided, no, I didn't want to risk that relationship with them thinking I was unstable to where, you know, so it's like, I kind of just sucked it up, because I was nervous that if I did that, that they would not call on me again for other projects.
Sure.
Okay, so if they felt like I was not competent or that I was not dealing with this well enough, that maybe the next time a show or an opportunity would come around, they would go, well, geez, not that they would do that. I'm not saying that they would, but that's what was in the back of my mind.
I mean, of course.
Gosh, if I do this, then they're not going to, you know, but it's very self-conscious, very, you know, beating yourself up kind of thing. And that's what happened even at the end of season 2 when I lost, and that was so crushing. I did come home a little depressed, but it was not like, because the money, of course, would have been nice, but nothing like the way I felt at the end of season 5. I mean, at the end of season 5, I felt like I should have gotten further. But, you know, when I saw who I was up against, I just thought, well, I can see who they're going to end up with. And I knew who they were going to end up with.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a feeling that I wasn't in that plan. So I just thought to myself, I mean, this was from day one when I finally saw who was there, and I thought, well, I'll just have as much fun as I can while I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be good for my career to be seen again on television. And it was.
Sure.
Taking that into consideration, I kind of snapped myself out of it about a month. Yeah, it was okay. I mean, I just kind of dealt with it, but it's very difficult to deal with those kind of emotions when you, you know, especially as an actor or somebody who's in the spotlight, dealing with what people say, you know. There are ridiculous commentaries on the internet that are completely uneducated and uninformed, and you just kind of go, you know what, they're tuning you out.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not healthy for you as an artist to be bombarded by that kind of vitriolic statements when it's coming from someone who doesn't even know the first thing about how the process works.
Sure.
You know? So that's very strange to me that people feel because they have a keyboard and a monitor that they're an automatic expert on everything. I mean, everybody has an opinion, and I value that. But, you know, let's criticize as much as you want, but preface it by saying, I don't know, jack shit shit about what I'm talking about, but...
Well, you know, and that's...
If it was me, I would have done this. You know, that kind of thing.
It can be tough. And you and I had a... I don't want to go too deep into this, but you and I had a discussion because there was a very similar thing that happened to me on Facebook with... to the defense of a couple of people who had asked me to stand up for them due to a review and a couple of other things. And I was able to handle it. You know, thank goodness I was able to handle it directly with the person and we finally got to talk and that sort of thing. But that idea of when you get to a certain level in your career, it really does open you up. And that whole idea of you have to figure out how you're going to deal with the reviews, how you're going to deal with the negativity. I mean, the praise is the other side of it too. You know, too much praise, and this was me in the beginning of my career, too much praise, and I lost perspective of the other side of the hill. So you kind of have to have this balance. Now, with what you're doing, with the classes that you're teaching, which I'm so excited to see you doing that and going to the cons and doing all of those kind of things, how is that working for you now? When is your next class? When is your next con?
Actually, my next class is actually this coming weekend. I'll be in Charlotte, North Carolina with Con Carolina, and I'm doing rare hands-on bonded class, bonded transfer prosthetic makeups. That's not bondo, car bondo. At least a lot of people think that. cabo patch bonded that we make that we use as a an edge blender. The makeup artist named Christian Tinsley innovated this technique and won a special Technical Academy Award for the process when he did it for The Passion of the Christ.
Okay.
They're waterproof makeups. They're really cool. They go on, they stay on all day. They take all kinds of makeup. And they're very, very easy to make. I mean, I had high school kids doing this before I, you know, quit. So anybody can learn this process. This is usually a demo class. It's usually one of my lecture classes, but we're making a real opportunity to do a hands-on where you get to actually do the work, take your molds home. That's going to be a fun class. I'm also doing the foam fabrication demo class, which is the whole process by which I made, you know, the cat and the fiddle jacket and the bellhop coat and all that stuff that everybody seems to recall.
Cool.
The most out of my work. So show you how to work with foam, show you how to make foam costuming. But, you know, it's really good for cosplayers. Everybody that's cosplaying now wants a suit of armor for something, and this foam is great for armor because it's lightweight and it looks like it's hard. You can buff it, you can polish it, you can spray it down, you can make it look like actual metal. So it's a really cool product, and I love working with it. And so, yeah. That's what we're doing.
How can folks, if they want to sign up for your class or take a look at what you've got, tell us how they can reach you.
The thing that you're always going to see the links to my projects on is going to be my Facebook fan page, and it's just facebook.com/RJHattie, and I post really regularly about classes. I usually give people about a 2-week to 3-week notice on classes. Coming up right after this, I'm doing a 2-week class here in Charleston. It's a master's prosthetic makeup class. So it'll take you 9 days, and we'll do 9 days together, one-on-one, and doing the whole process from start to finish, live casting all the way through the painting and applying. And that's exciting because I've always wanted to do that, but I've never had a space to do it in.
Mm-hmm.
So now I do. Yeah, that's pretty cool. And I'm excited about the space. Not changing the name of the company at all. I just wanted to give the locale a name. Like, it's still Radiflex Company, but it's like, what do I call this place? Is it a shop? Is it a lab? I don't know what to call it, you know. So we decided on Radiflex Creature Compound. So.
Oh, I like that. The Creature Compound. That's fantastic.
The Creature Compound.
I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast. You're a dear friend, but also just an artist that I really, really respect. And I know a lot of folks just love you to death. And we thank you so much for being honest with us and sharing your story about your life and career. And we want to follow you. I do want to encourage all of the listeners to go to RJ's fan page and check out what he's doing, because his work is incredible. And if you have just the opportunity to be in the room with him and to learn with him, it certainly is an experience. So thank you, RJ, for being on the podcast. We really appreciate it. Well, I try.
It's good to hear from you, and I love hearing your voice. I feel bad that we have to schedule phone calls now, but this is...
Well, you know, that's what it's like when you're living the life.
You're living the life. That's all both. Burning the candle. Burning the candle. depends on what side of that, right?
That's exactly what we're doing. But thank you so very much. And ladies and gentlemen, this has been Wise Words Wednesdays with my friend RJ Hattie here on the Acting for Your Life podcast. Now go out there and break some legs.